very good Friday. Welcome to this edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Coming up in the show here today, we'll bring you feature agricultural news reports, and then we'll check in with national and regional agricultural news headlines as well. And we get started with regional agricultural news right after this.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
Supplies of California strawberries are coming on strong from the Watsonville Salinas region. They are ramping up to peak production, which is forecasted to arrive in early to mid-July, according to Nick Chappell, director of sales for California Giant Berry Farms. He says their overall supplies of strawberries this year are up slightly over last year. It is largely due to their increase in acreage. The strawberry season out of the region has been later due to the weather conditions, such as heavy spring rains and flooding. In turn, this moved production to larger volumes arriving later than average. The Watsonville Salinas region is a good example of this, as peak volumes are forecasted to arrive in early to mid-July. Weather permitting, the region's season will run into mid-November, according to Chappell. He notes that the biggest challenge of 2023 has been the weather. Ultimately, weather impacted crops early on from above-average amounts of rain, flooding, or uncharacteristically cold weather. Like most California production, their production curve was shifted and peak promotable volumes are arriving, albeit later. For California Giant, it has both organic and conventional strawberries coming out of this area, as well as the Santa Maria region. He says the fruit quality they've been seeing is outstanding. As for demand, he says it is good, particularly as the 4th of July holiday approaches and pricing is slightly up this year compared to last year at this time. California onion supplies look to be on a shorter side right now. Jessica Perry of Perry & Sons Farms says that she thinks a lot of the overwinter varieties available at this time of the year could not either be planted or they were damaged. There just doesn't seem to be as much supply as there has been in the past. She notes that the heavy rains earlier this year, as well as the temperatures, are notable factors. She said they got hit with some cooler temperatures and just lost some of the crops, so some of the yields were not as high. Right now, Perry & Sons is transitioning out of El Centro, California, or the Imperial Valley, into Firebaugh, California, or the San Joaquin Valley. She says it's a little bit later because they had planted some additional onions in El Centro in anticipation of a bit of a light crop in June out of Firebaugh. She says they're in El Centro longer than they normally are by about 2 weeks. Along with California, Mexico is also underway with production and contending with California for market share, particularly in the east. As for demand, Perry says it's decent, though it's possible inflationary pressure on consumers that is affecting onion movement. She says when she talks to her retail partners, they say their demand is off. They're not moving as much volume as they typically have. That said, pricing has been good, and Perry believes pricing opportunities might lie ahead in sweet onions, with Georgia having a shorter crop of Idalias. She says they might finish early, and that might put some more pressure on California. Later down the road, the market could get pretty good by mid to late July. Favorable spring weather during California's prune bloom period could bode well for the state's crop. The California Prune Board is optimistic that the season will size up well for growers who are paid a premium on fruit size and on tonnage. The industry expects 75,000 short tons of fruit to be harvested later this year. Don Zia, executive director of the California Prune Board, says they have built solid demand and California prune handlers maintain careful inventory management, putting the industry in a pretty steady position. It seems that the California prune industry is in a good state of balance between supply and demand right now, with statewide production from about 40,000 acres. 20 years ago, the industry had 80,000 acres of prunes planted, and that was too much. Currently, the California industry, which accounts for 99% of the U.S. supply and 40% of the global supply, competes in a global marketplace where the supply-demand balance can be skewed quickly by production. Still, a key to delivering high-quality fruit this year will be managing the crop load. The crop thinning window is closing on growers as management changes will turn towards maintaining good irrigation and nutrient applications. The only pole-grown operation west of the Mississippi, Oceanside Pole, will harvest the season's first vine-ripened tomatoes at the end of this month alongside exclusive marketer Oppie. Oceanside Pole expects 3.4 million cases of Rounds and Romas from its 700-acre farm in California, in addition to 160 acres out of Mexico, all produced to the same high standards upheld by its management teams and growers, ensuring a consistent product. The unique growing method raises fruit off the ground to improve airflow and therefore tomato quality to ripen to its juicy, robust taste naturally on the vine, then harvested at retail specifications to arrive at precise perfection, according to the company. Director of Sales and Strategy and Sales Executive Mark Smith says that the recent off-season rain has effectively cleansed the soil and improved overall crop quality. The increased water supply has contributed to a better yield and enhanced product integrity. Oceanside Pole has also made strides in supporting former military members through its veterans program, collaborating with nearby Marine Corps Camp Pendleton to provide civilian work experience to those transitioning out of service. Now with five full-time retired servicemen helping lead the operation, this program is more important than ever to its success. Furthermore, Oceanside Pole's Brussels sprout season is in full swing with availability until around July 15th. The state of California will roll out a first-of-its-kind approach to curbing the state's catastrophic wildfire problem by providing new protections for prescribed fire and cultural burning practitioners. The $20 million allocated for the Prescribed Fire Liability Claims Fund pilot will cover losses in the rare instance that a prescribed or cultural burn escapes control. California Senator Bill Dodd authored the 2020 bill, which is Senate Bill 926, that made this fund possible, continuing his many years of leadership on wildfire and prescribed fire-related legislation. The use of prescribed fire and cultural burning, sometimes collectively called good or beneficial fire, is a key component of wildfire risk management in California. These projects reduce hazardous fuels, help restore ecological and cultural values, and make communities safer and the ecosystems more resilient to fire. However, lack of liability insurance for practitioners has been a major barrier to increasing the use of prescribed fire, even as firefighters, fire scientists, at-risk communities, and state, federal, and tribal leaders call for more. The fund will provide up to $2 million in coverage for prescribed fire projects led by a qualified burn boss or cultural practitioner. The fund is meant to demonstrate that prescribed fire, when carefully planned, resourced, and implemented, is a low-risk land management tool that mitigates the larger, more damaging risks of high-severity wildfires. The fund is the first of its kind nationally and is a result of several years of collaboration by a diversity of partners working with Senator Dodd's office, including the Nature Conservancy, Cal Fire, the University of California Cooperative Extension, the California Department of Insurance, tribal representatives, and many others.
It's looking to be another hot summer for California growers, with temperatures likely in the triple digits, which isn't too surprising even with the cool, wet winter. A hot summer means heat stress, of course, for many specialty crops, and table grapes are no stranger to the effects of this abiotic stressor, according to AfriKelp Central California agronomist Drake Salzwasser.
In the past, few years, we've had significant drought, a lot of wildfires throughout the Central Valley that caused smoke and potentially some effect on table grapes due to the coverage of the smoke on the crops. And so those were definitely things that we've seen in the past. As to this year, with the cooler temperatures and kind of getting into the end of June, we're going to be expecting some higher temperatures coming up, and it's going to be sort of a drastic change. And that's one thing that as a table grape grower, I'd be concerned about, with the grapes kind of going through the sizing phase right now and soon to be in the veraison stage. The heat is going to play a pretty big effect, and you're going to want to take close watch to your irrigation schedule and make sure that the plants have everything that they need in order to combat the heat and produce that optimum yield that we're all looking for.
While irrigation is going to be key, there are products on the market that can help crops cope with abiotic stressors like excessive heat and ultraviolet radiation. AfriKelp has conducted extensive research specifically in this area with liquid seaweed extract applied to specialty crops, and Salzwasser explained some recommendations for applying in the summer.
Our products are typically ran foliarly, So sprayed onto the leaf surface. We do multiple applications throughout the season. Some are before bloom time. And then as we continue to the berry growth stage and the sizing time frame, we're going to be putting on a few more applications, usually a couple during that time period. And then once we get into the initiation of color or the veraison stage, kind of as the fruit is ripening, that's when we like to do a couple of more applications, which would kind of coincide with the time frame of significant heat stress.
Applications also might look a little different this year in particular, given the crop development during winter and spring, as well as the abundance of water received.
In this particular year, we have some good things on our side. So with all of the rain, you know, ideally, it's going to rinse some of the sodium that could be built up in the soil. It's going to rinse that below the root zone, down below where it's going to be affecting the crop. So that's going to allow more water availability for those roots that you have in the rhizosphere, about the first, you know, 12 inches of soil. And when you have more water available, you can cool the plant can cool itself, you know, much more efficiently. And keeping the plant cool and out of heat stress is extremely important, because when you have heat stress, obviously it disrupts photosynthesis, it disrupts transpiration, and many other physiological processes within the plant. And that creates a whole, you know, a list of other issues that you're going to deal with. So yeah, definitely the increased rainfall that we had this year compared to years past is going to definitely help, you know, with the stress, but keeping the water on and making sure that you are irrigating according with the amount that you need for the crop coefficient, that's what's going to be crucial for the guys this season, is making sure that when we do have the heat, we put the water on and we get the crops what they need when they need it. Most of our applications are going to be the same. Some people in some, you know, situations, we're going to be, you know, changing the rate or probably in this particular year, you know, manipulating the timing a little bit. So a lot of the crops we're seeing coming through a little bit later and pushing the applications a week or 10 days down the calendar in comparison to years past is more along the lines of what we're doing this season.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom. Introducing My Ag Life Jobs, the pathway to career opportunities in California agriculture. Whether you're currently in pursuit of employment or searching for talent as an employer, our network serves as the resource to connections in the agricultural industry. Plant roots in your career and embark today by exploring jobs.myaglife.com. That's jobs.myaglife.com.
According to Wine Business News, consumer spending on domestic wine, including bulk imports, increased nearly 11% versus last year to $66.7 billion in the 12 months ending in May. On-premise spending increased 19%, while off-premise spending increased 6%. Spending on bulk imports increased more than 14%. USDA's Organic Transition Initiative and updates regarding it are among the various assistance available to organic producers as they establish themselves and their markets. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
A series of recent announcements, the latest within the Agriculture Department's Organic Transition Initiative.
The Organic Transition Initiative is a holistic initiative really aimed at growing and enhancing domestic organic production here in the United States.
Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs Jenny Moffitt starts with the new Organic Market Development Grant Program.
We just announced the grant application. We had initially had a deadline for the organic market development to receive applications by July 10th, but we are extending it to August 8th due to demand that we're already hearing from the organic sector. There's a lot of interest in this program.
Up to $75 million in competitive grants are available to eligible projects designed to expand domestically produced organic products. Also announced, available funding through the Organic Certification Cost Share Program, administered by the Farm Service Agency. This is FSA Administrator Zach Ducheneau.
We're accepting applications for OCCSP to October 31st, and it's important to note that this year we were able to increase the cost share back to the statutory maximum of $750 per category and up to 75% of the allowable certification up to that value.
FSA also announced the start of the funding application process for the Organic Dairy Marketing Assistance Program. FSA Acting Deputy Administrator John Burge says applications will be accepted through July 24th.
We're making $104 million available for organic dairy operations to provide assistance toward their projected marketing costs in 2023 and calculated using the calculated marketing costs of 2022.
Undersecretary Moffitt notes additional programs under USDA organic umbrella designed to improve markets, provide transition avenues, and support, such as
the Transition to Organic Partnership Program. That is where there are 160 partners around the country who are funded by USDA to help transitioning producers navigate all of the different things, whether that's NRCS, cost share, or the certification process.
More details on various USDA organic-oriented efforts are available online at farmers.gov/organic-transition-initiative. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Farm Action and the National Dairy Producers Organization have sent a letter to U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack calling for the immediate release of federally mandated annual dairy checkoff spending reports, which the secretary has not filed for the duration of his tenure. The letter states that the reports, which are mandated by the same legislation that authorizes the dairy checkoff program, have not been submitted to Congress by USDA for the years 2020, 2021, and 2022. USDA is required by law to describe activities conducted, accounting for the receipt and disbursement of all funds, and including an independent analysis of the effectiveness of the program. In explaining the importance of these reports, the letter points to the amount of money collected by the dairy checkoff program and the distressed state of the dairy producers who must pay into it. Since USDA's last annual report, the National Dairy Promotion and Research Program has collected nearly $1 billion in mandatory checkoff fees from dairy farmers. During the same time period, more than 6,000 dairy operators went out of business, and remaining dairy farmers continued to face economic hardship and an unprecedented farm stress crisis, according to the letter. The letter concludes by calling for the publication of the reports or an update on their status by July 7th, and it urges the secretary to fulfill his statutory obligation on behalf of U.S. dairy farms. Farm Action describes itself as a farmer-led organization fighting corporate monopolies in agriculture. A move to monitor and regulate China and other countries that buy farmland in the U.S. continues to pick up steam as a provision to grant USDA more oversight could be attached to the next farm bill. Senator Joni Ernst, a Republican from Iowa, announced plans to address the common concern she said she often hears from farmers, and that is that food security is a national security. Along with Senator Debbie Stabenow, a Democrat from Michigan and chairwoman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, Ernst said she hopes the next farm bill will include an overhaul of the system that has allowed U.S. national security risks to go on for far too long. Ernst and Stabenow want to give USDA more oversight authority through the Agricultural Foreign Investment Disclosure Act to be able to investigate foreign investments in U.S. agriculture by allowing the agency to upgrade the tools available to them to combat nefarious interests in American farmland. That would include creating a public database of ag land owned by foreign interests and an audit of such ownership. Ernst said she also wants to prohibit foreign nationals from participating in Farm Service Agency programs.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.